Okay, so the past several weeks we've been looking at observational practices when we're observing ourselves in this present moment, learning how to not interfere, not changing things, getting to know ourselves on a really deep level by observing ourselves very closely. This month, we're going to be looking at creative practices. So instead of observing and not interfering, we're going to be purposely creating states of mind or thoughts or whatever situations, attributes. And just about every religion and philosophy and non-religious spiritual practice and just generally good people categories of things have some emphasis on positive practices of some sort, you know, whether it's love one another or be compassionate or be generous. In Buddhism, there's the classic loving kindness practices. In Christianity, you've got all sorts of prayers, intercessory prayers for people to get better if they're sick. It's pretty ubiquitous, and I don't think needs a religion or a spiritual a space to hold this desire to reduce suffering for ourselves and for others, and to create more goodness in the world. So next week we're going to be looking at practices in the framework of unified mindfulness that we can find all over in different realms. We'll be looking at some ways psychology and therapy use these practices, classic practices of generating goodness and such. But for today, I just want to go over generally why kindness seems to be such a big deal everywhere. So some of you know that I occasionally sink into depression, and I've discovered that one of the best things I can do when I start feeling depressed is to go help somebody. You know, just be with someone and be helpful, or go out and smile at people, whatever. It makes me feel better. It doesn't always bring me out of the depths, but it certainly improves my mood. And I always assumed that this was because I'm getting my mind off my own problems and focusing out on other things. And that's certainly the case. But there's more to why kindness is an effective way of improving my mood. And there's been a lot of research about this. And so some of the findings that have been pretty well established now is that being kind, doing acts of kindness, can reduce your blood pressure. It increases dopamine and serotonin in your brain, which are what they call the happiness hormones. If you don't have dopamine or serotonin, that you end up with depression. It increases oxytocin, which is another hormone, which is sometimes called the love hormone. That's the one that is involved with interactions and relationships and bonding with people. And also they've looked at fMRIs, you know, functional MRIs, and have found that acts of kindness activate the centers of your brain involved with pleasure and reward. So there's a lot of actual sort of chemistry going on that is beneficial when you are kind in general. Then there's been other studies looking more specifically at how, what kind of kindness has these effects. And they found that being kind to other people has this measurable effect of improving your mood and reducing negative feelings. And being kind to yourself, in the sense of indulging or treating yourself in some way when you're feeling down, actually has no positive benefit at all in these research studies. They've also found that whether you're kind to someone that you know and like, or if you're kind to a stranger, has the same effect, the same increase in these hormones and the same lights in your brain. And then this is the part that I love the best, which is if you're doing an act of kindness to somebody else, which can be, you know, anything, carrying the groceries for someone or letting someone cross in the crosswalk or something. If a third person sees that from a distance, even if they're not participating in any way with the act, they just see it happening, then their hormones increase and their brain lights up. They get the benefit of the kindness just from watching it from a distance. So that's pretty cool. And in fact, some researchers I've read have gone so far as to say that kindness is addictive, because we get addicted to these hormone rushes. And so the more you are kind, the more you want to be kind, and so it becomes an addiction. And it makes sense. You know, you can see in evolution that it would be more beneficial for people to be kind to each other for the survival of the species than to be mean. But then this begs the question that if kindness is so addictive, how come there's still so much meanness in the world? So I had to go do some more research. And I discovered that, well, I'll tell you about these two research projects that I found. At 2016, Mount Sinai Hospital School of Medicine, there was a apparently really important project in which they were researching aggressive mice. Now, I don't know enough about all the biology to understand what they were saying about GABA this and receptors and this and that, but the conclusion, actually let me read it, the quote for you. Here it is. The lead researcher writes, "Our study is the first to demonstrate that bullying behavior activates a primary brain reward circuit that makes it pleasurable for a subset of individuals." So there are some individuals that find it pleasurable to be a bully. Now this correlates with some research done at the University of Chicago, in which they took a group of 16 to 18-year-old schoolboys. Half of the boys had a history of aggressive behavior like bullying or being confrontational, stealing things from other kids, that sort of stuff. And the other half had no history of unusual aggression. So they took these guys, stuck them in an MRI machine, and showed them videos of people inflicting pain on other people. So I think one of the videos was someone slamming down a piano cover on someone who is playing. And so they look at the brains while these boys are watching. And the researchers were actually really surprised, because what they found, first of all, is that both sets of boys registered activity in the pain center of the brain. Now, this is what most normal people would do. This correlates with empathy. You see someone in pain and it'll light up the pain center. And having that happen when you're watching someone in pain, that's sort of what creates empathy. So both groups of boys had this response. But the aggressive boys also had activity in the brain centers for reward and pleasure. And finally, they had a reduction in activity in the center of self-regulation. So what they were expecting to find is that they just didn't register. They just didn't register pain in the way we would. They didn't have empathy. This was what the hypothesis was. But what in fact they found is that even the bullies experienced this empathetic response, but they had an overriding response, which was pleasure and reward in watching the pain. So I'll just quote the researcher from this guy, from this project. It is entirely possible that these aggressive boys, that they experience seeing pain in others as exciting and fun and pleasurable. So, in other words, there is a subset of people who can become addicted to meanness. Now, you add on to that the fact that we know if, for example, children from abusive households often end up being abusers themselves. Situations in formative years can lead to bullying later. So you end up with actually this addiction of kindness has a lot to fight against. I don't know what the numbers are for this subset that can become addicted to bullying, but clearly there's a good chunk if you look around the world and see what we're doing to each other. So, yeah, kindness is addictive, but so is meanness. So, in schools, where they want to reduce bullying, it's been found that rather than trying to teach people not to bully, it's more effective to teach people to be kind. And the most effective way of teaching kids how to be kind is, can you guess?
Example.
Being kind to them. If someone is kind to you, you're more likely to be kind to someone else. Now, that's one of those examples of science proving something that seems sort of obvious. But it's always nice to have your gut instinct backed up by science. But what that tells us is that the way to increase kindness in society in general is not by creating more laws or, you know, fears of punishment or whatever, but by being kinder to people. And for one thing, if I'm kind to someone, then that's a little bit more kindness in the world. But that person I'm being kind to is now more likely to be kind to someone else. And plus, if anybody else happens to see me being kind to this other person, they're all also likely to be more likely to be kind in future. So we should all go out into public places and do kind things for people and make sure that other people see us doing it. So you're sort of pitting the kindness addiction against the meanness addiction. We probably already knew that, but it's good to have some understanding of how that happens. Kindness isn't just some magical thing. It's, well, everything happens in your brain, but now we know a little bit why. But there's more to kindness when you're looking at a meditative path than just feeling better. And that's a great thing to do, to feel better and to make other people feel better. But it's also part of this path, and in fact of probably just about any contemplative path that encourages kindness, that we're supposed to be kind to everybody, not just to nice people, even to our enemies. And that's hard to do. You know, and why is that so important to do? Well, for one thing, as we've just been saying, we want to give them examples of kindness. But we also find that that having ill will against somebody or or not being kind can create this separation from people. There's a me and a us and them sort of thing, a self and other. And you create this separation, then you are perpetuating the distance that kindness tries to connect. So we've been talking with the in the previous months about looking at ourselves and discovering that there's not really much of anything there. But we do live in a world with other people. And so in addition to discovering that we're not really a self, we also need to connect with other people. And this is what the kindness does. We're not trying to simply make the world a kinder place, although that's a great thing to do. We are trying to connect with people on a deep level. And the two work together. Being kind to people helps us to connect, but connecting also will result in kindness. And I'm going to talk next week about more about this idea of not having a self and yet having to connect with every other self. But I don't think I'll go into that now. I think it's probably better just to stick with making the world a kinder place this week. But keep in mind that being unkind to one person, you can be kind to the entire world, but if you're unkind to one person, right there you're already causing separation. And we want to create connection, not separation. So that's probably enough about kindness for now. Next week when we talk about practices, we're not going to be looking just at kindness. That's just kindness or love or generosity. Those sort of practices are the ones that come most easily to mind when we think about the creative practices of making the world a better place and making ourselves better. But we'll be looking at the broader framework of how we can use the spaces that we've been talking about in the past weeks and some of the techniques we've already been learning, how we can turn that around and make them into creative processes to address whatever situation needs to be addressed. But until next week, I encourage you just to bear in mind, in addition to looking at ourselves deeply, to remember to be looking outwards and connecting with other people. And doing that with acts of kindness or generosity or love or patience or whatever is a really good place to start with that. Any questions or comments?
I think the one thing I thought was how the bullies who experience pain, I mean, when they see pain, experience empathy and pleasure. I don't understand how they can experience empathy.
Okay, let me try and be a little more clear. They don't experience, as far as I understand it, I mean, I didn't do the research, but they experience some activity in the pain region of their brain, mm-hmm. which is what would then become empathy in a normal person.
Oh.
So presumably if you took away their response of pleasure at seeing the pain, then they'd be able to notice the pain at seeing the pain and would respond with empathy. But clearly they're not empathetic mm-hmm. because the pleasure of watching that is overwhelming the mm-hmm. the empathetic response. But it also gives us hope because that response is there, or rather the activity is there. Mm-hmm. And whereas the researchers originally expected to find that that was lacking and that was what the problem was bullies, we don't have to find a way of putting that response into the brain. They're having that response.
They just need kindness.
Right, we need to flood the mm-hmm. the positive, the pleasure response with kindness so that it mm-hmm. gets watered down enough to respond with empathy.